You're listening to the Plain Label Podcast, Beer Breaks. Hello and welcome to the 8th episode of Beer Breaks. I'm your host, Eric Williams, and if you've been paying attention recently, you've heard me talk about how I've fallen off the Marvel Cinematic Universe wagon, and so we're devoting the next 2 episodes to get me caught up. Joining me on this adventure is the man behind the power principle, Mr. New Mutant himself, Alan White.
Damn right!
Now, where I left off in the MCU, or the Marvel Cinematic Universe, was Avengers 2, Age of Ultron. Up until that point, I'd seen everything mostly in theaters, but with teaching and with the podcast hiatus, I sort of stopped making time for the film. So for this episode, my first catch-up with these films, we're going to be discussing the films Ant-Man and Captain America 3, Civil War. Before getting into our discussion, I would like to mention that this podcast is brought to you by the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there. And this episode is also sponsored by Audible. For you, the listeners of Plain Label Podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial. For this episode, our Audible recommendation is Marvel Comics, The Untold Story by Sean Howe and narrated by Stephen Hoy. The book is over 17 hours long with a list price of $42.20. But like I said, this audiobook could be yours for free. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/plainlabel. Again, that's audibletrial.com/plainlabel for your free audiobook. All right, Alan. So you told me right before we started recording that you got a little something just for me, just for the show. What are you having drink-wise this evening?
Well, I don't know if I would. I think it might be every time I drink, this is what I drink. So I get Weiler's pink lemonade, or regular lemonade, actually. It is Weiler's Light. It's a packet of powder that you put in water.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts you off with 5 little calories, and then you drown it in Di Serrano liqueur, amaretto.
The amaretto, yes. Man, that is... I don't know that I've been bold enough yet to try this, because I don't really drink amaretto just straight like that. Oh, I mean, essentially straight.
Well, the way I make it, it's an amaretto sour.
Oh, okay. So right? I thought you were just talking about how you just put the powder in and that was it.
Oh my God, you're trying to get me to just totally burn out my entire esophageal passage and all my stomach lining, aren't you?
Well, I was like, well, geez, I mean, he's going after it, I guess. I don't know.
Then I neglected to say the water part.
Right,
I neglected to say I make the lemonade, and then I put the Di Serrano all up in it.
Okay.
And
that makes a lot more sense to me. I'm glad we got that straightened out. Even though the show is called Beer Breaks, I've been consistent in my not having beer, but today I figured that I would shake things up, and I'm going, that's right, I'm going local. So from Lincoln, Nebraska, I am having, from the White Elm Brewing Company, I'm having a White Elm Saison, which is quite good, and it has like a real tart kind of finish.
Mm-hmm.
So you're drinking a beer and you know it's a beer, but then when you're done with it, you're like, it kind of gets you right underneath the jawline. Like when you have something that's really sour, you know, and you're doing that.
Yeah.
You're doing that a little bit.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. Yeah, that's what the sour part of the whiskey sour is about. And
yep.
The amaretto sour.
So there you go. So I'm having that. And I also have, just depending on how this goes tonight, I have a backup beer just waiting here.
Might it go that you'll need it?
Well, depends on how much laughing I'm doing and how much drinking I'm doing.
We come to blows. That's how.
That's right. Yeah. The second beer I'm having, this is an Alan special, and not because of the name of it, but it did make me laugh and it made me think of you. So this is also from White Elm Brewing, And I got this today, and I have yet to try it, so we may have a little on-air sampling of it. But it's an IPA, so it is quite hoppy, I'm guessing. And it is called Skinny Legs IPA.
I reminded you of that? Why?
Just because you have been motivating my wife by posting all of the workouts and whatnot, and she's been feeling very... Damn, I need his energy, I think, is what we had sent you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw the Skinny Legs thing, and it made me think of working out, which made me think of you.
Well, Skinny Legs don't sound complimentary or something like you want to get if you work out.
Well, you're overcoming the Skinny Legs is what I'm saying.
Not me. Not from where I sit. I have to overcome the big, chunky, fat legs is what I have to do.
Well, there you
I'm
go.
I'm trying to get them.
You get some
thinner.
Some lean and mean Skinny Legs.
Yeah, go out and get you a new beer then. You got to go find another beer.
I'll just keep drinking. I'll just drink this size on then. How about that?
Yeah, get you another one of those. Put that other one in the refrigerator.
There we go. All right, so with that, I think we're ready to begin our discussion. We're going to start first. We're going to go chronologically because that's what we do, whether Rachel remembers that or not. But we're going to go with our first film from...
Hey, Rachel, how you doing, girl?
She'll be like, hey, girl. Our first film is from 2015, and it is Ant-Man.
Imagine... a soldier, the size of an insect, the ultimate secret weapon.
If you give godlike powers to everyone, it's going to be chaos.
So how do we stop him?
I know a guy. Scott, I've been watching you for a while. You're different. And I believe everyone deserves a shot at redemption. Do you?
Absolutely. My days of breaking into places and stealing stuff are over. What do you want me to do?
I want you to break into a place and steal some stuff.
Makes sense.
Are you ready to become a hero?
Now, this suit has power. You have to learn how to control it. And these are your greatest allies.
You're kind of cute. Whoa.
When you're small, you have superhuman strength. You like a bullet. So you need to know how to punch.
You want to show me how to punch? Show me how to punch.
That's how you punch.
You tried to hide your suit from me. Now, it's gonna blow up in your face and destroy everyone you care about.
Scott, get out of here!
Did you think you could stop the future? You're just a thief!
No.
I'm Ant-Man. I know. It wasn't my idea.
And the IMDb plot synopsis, this is from Marvel, actually, and it goes like this. Armed with a super suit with the astonishing ability to shrink in scale but increase in strength, Cat Burglar Scott Lang must embrace his inner hero and help his mentor, Dr. Hank Pym, plan and pull off a heist that will save the world. Now, that ain't right.
That is very, you are very right that it's not right. Hank was not his mentor.
Absolutely. And he's not really his mentor in the comics or in the book. Or I mean, in the comics or in the movie.
Well, definitely not in the movie. I think there. Well, no. Yeah, you're right. Not in the comic books either. After a little while, he tries to be.
Mm-hmm. So I thought that was a strange little recap that was written by Marvel to have it.
No.
Not be right like that.
Who wrote that?
I don't know. Some intern probably.
Yeah, they need to hire me.
There you go.
That's my answer for everything that Marvel does.
This is your first step into getting hired, right?
Well, no, this will be my eighth or ninth step, I think. I'm always putting it out there. Marvel, come on now. You need to hire me.
You better know better and just hire him, right?
Yep, yep.
Okay, so this is the first watch you've had since you saw this in the theaters, am I right?
Yes.
Okay, so what did you think of it originally in the theater, and then I'll tell you why I didn't see it.
Okay, in the theater, my experience was of awe and wonder, and I was amused, and it took me back down some paths that I'm always looking forward to when I go to a Marvel production movie. It's just take me back to the comics, or take me in, or show me new stuff, and just flesh out these heroes. Flesh them out, make them walk around, let me hear them talk. I just love the 3D. Well, I don't go to actually 3D showings because I'm like real cheap. Plus also, 3D doesn't work on me.
Oh, is that right?
Right, I'm a mutant. Oh. So they don't – I can sit in a 3D screening and I can understand what it's supposed to be doing when they poke things out of the screen at you, but it doesn't leave 2D for me because my eyes don't align, or they didn't align when I was growing up, and now that they're aligned, they don't sync up. So 3D doesn't work for me.
Interesting. Interesting. So you quite enjoyed yourself. This gave you the nostalgia and gave you all the Marvel feelings and all that kind of thing.
Yeah. And I'm a sucker when it comes to this. Like I know you don't like to be manipulated, but
that's right.
In your emotions. I know you resist that with the fires of a thousand suns.
Yes.
I know it. And so, and sometimes I think, and I thought of you when they hit these emotional beats and the music swelled up. I thought of you, and I thought he must be sitting at home with his arms crossed, just burning up right now.
It's really funny. It's really funny. What did you think of it the second go? Like revisiting it, did you still have the same sense of wonder and all of that kind of thing? Or?
Yes, man. I mean, I don't just bite the hook and let it just flap. Drag me around on the shore, but I noticed things this time that I didn't realize before, and I have in my notes, I'm a little skeptical about some stuff. I'm not letting them get away with everything, but those emotional beats still got me. The wonder and the just the visual spectacle of it all got me again.
Okay. So the reason I didn't see it, I guess let's really, really briefly talk about Edgar Wright, the director, most recently of Baby Driver. He did Shaun of the Dead, he did Hot Fuzz, he did those movies, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. And he originally was signed on for this. He's still credited as being one of the story, I think it was a story by, and he's one of those guys. So he was originally directing this. He has a very particular style, and then he left due to creative differences. And Peyton Reed, who is just kind of like a workman, sort of a director. Like he's not that well known, I guess I would say. Like he's not. It's not like, oh, that's a Peyton Reed sort of thing. You know what I mean? And so he took over the film, and it was kind of. I felt like from what I read, like the directive was make it more like these other Marvel films, like make it fit into these Marvel films.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was a little like skeptical about, ooh, I've been riding this pretty good wave with all these Marvel films. I don't know if I really want to go out of my way to see this movie about a character that I didn't really have any connection to. I mean, Ant-Man, I mean, I grew up, you know, reading Avengers, and I read Avengers West Coast when it was Scott Lang, and it had his daughter, and it had, you know, the black and I think it was like navy and white Spider-Woman that was on the team too, and War Machine, and all these different people.
Oh, Julia Carpenter.
Yes, yes. And so I was reading, you know, West Coast Avengers then, or Avengers West Coast. And so I was familiar with the character. And then when I saw Michael Douglas was going to be Hank Pym, that got me excited, and Paul Rudd, I was like, ooh, that's kind of interesting, but I didn't make the time to see it, and then I read the reviews about it, just kind of generally, like not, you know, plot and spoiler, but, and I saw that it was just kind of like, okay, kind of reviews. And so it didn't really make me want to go out and see it. That being said, now that I watched the film, I had a lot of fun with this movie.
Damn right! Don't even try it.
And what's really funny about it is I watched this with the little one, with my 9-year-old, and I've apparently have been off the wagon so much, like she hasn't seen any of the movies before. To where she didn't know who the Falcon was when he came in later. And she's like, well, is that like an Avengers thing? And I was like, well, yeah, it's like the Avengers. She goes, well, who's that? I was like, you don't know who the Avengers are? And she's like, no. She's like, I haven't seen any of those movies. And I was like, oh, my goodness. Okay.
I'm calling the authorities.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to rescue that child.
And so I said, tomorrow we're watching the Avengers, which we did. And I have her little report about that, too. And then yesterday we watched Cap 3. And, you know, that she was pretty much caught up on things after watching Avengers.
Yes.
And so I think part of my typical resistance to the film manipulating me was softened by the fact that I was watching the movie and I was watching her watch the movie.
Yes. Through the eyes of a child.
That's exactly right. And so instead of my grumpy exterior and, and frankly interior, there are parts of it where, you know, at the beginning here, just looking back at my notes, I'm like, okay, you know, I wasn't digging on the Scott storyline for a little while. Like, I was having problems with, like, the Russian joke guy and their little crew. And I understood why it was there. Like, I understood, okay, this is supposed to bring a little levity. This is more of a kid-friendly addition to this world. But I just didn't like the jokes. Like, I just didn't like the actual execution of the jokes. You know what I mean?
Do you remember any specific jokes?
Well, it's just any time the Russian guy I really had a problem with. I just didn't think he was particularly funny.
Okay.
And so every time he came on, I was just rolling my eyes. And and so I just put that, you know, the actual continuity stuff with Peggy Carter and with the Michael Douglas stuff, like I really liked that because that brought me into the, oh, everything's connected, and oh, look at that over there. That says, you know, that's a hotel named after Al Milgram. I was like, oh, that's cool. Even though the hotel was like a shitty hotel, I was like, well, is that a compliment or is that like a
right?
Because it's like the Milgram Hotel, and you go inside, and then it's a shithole. And I was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to think.
All sorts of shit was going down in that hotel. I didn't understand all the culture that was going. Do hotels do all that?
I don't think so.
That raves, parties at the base, or in the. It seemed like it was the ground floor.
What it reminded me of is it reminded me of the hotel that Tom Hanks stays in Big. I was like, oh, this is like the diversity hotel. This is where like all these cultures, because it's New York City, are all together in one place here.
So that's San Francisco. So I guess
San Francisco. Yeah. Sorry. San Francisco.
Oh, it's in San Francisco.
Yeah. In Big, it was New York, but yeah.
Yeah. So I guess maybe San Francisco is the same as New York in some aspects.
I guess so. But that was strange. I thought that was kind of a rough, you know, I don't know. I don't know what I think about that. I also put one of the things, and I'm just going to get kind of the problems that I had out of the way here quickly. I thought that the amount of bug and animal jokes was kind of ridiculous. Like I understood that there was going to be some, and it was going to be, you know, oh, I'm going to squash you like a bug. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, I'll give you one or two. I just felt like I kept hearing all of these different puns, and I was like, ugh, this is getting to be a bit much. And I didn't know if that was just Corey Stoll, the Yellow Jacket character. I didn't know if that was him just kind of ad-libbing, or if these guys were just sort of being able to go off script, or if that was something that was written in there or what. But those were some of the really small things that weren't really quite working for me. But when it did start working was once they once we got to the point where the film, where you can see the money on the screen, basically. Like, once we start seeing him shrink, yes. And once we start going through all of that, I was like, oh my God. Like, the first thing I thought of was Inner Space, because, you know, I was watching movies in the 80s, and I enjoyed Martin Short back in the day and that sort of thing. But, so I immediately thought of that and Honey, I Shrunk the Kids and those sorts of films. And I was like, oh, okay, they're just updating this for a superhero, and that looks really cool, and oh, look at that. And Anna was just enthralled with the idea of how far he would have to run for everything. Because he's in the bath, and she's like, he's having to run so far.
Yes.
And I was like, well, yeah, he's really small. And she's like, that would be really horrible.
Yeah. And there's – so, yeah. Well, let me there's just a couple of things that I want to point out in my viewing of it, mm-hmm. and then we can catch up to those scenes.
Sure.
Because I definitely have something to say about that bathtub scene. I just have one little problem with that. But I loved that, yeah, like you were saying, the continuity that they showed. They started off the movie with – this is in the MCU. You know why? Because here's Howard Stark and here's Peggy Carter.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then I love the fact that when Hank Pym walks in and he's younger, because this is back in the day when Peggy Carter was still alive and mm-hmm. so was Howard Stark, that the guy who's obviously going to be a pain in the ass in the movie pops off in the worst way to Hank about his wife, Janet. And Hank slams his fucking head into the desk that he's sitting in front of. Bow! and Howard and Peggy just stood there like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, they didn't do much.
Yep. And then Howard said, don't look at me. You said it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, now see, that's how you win the audience right away. Because here's the man. He's coming in. Something happened to his wife. He's not talking about it. Then this little asshole says something cruel about it. So our hero takes a little violence out on him, and the other two just step back because they know he deserved it. Now I'm bought in. Mm-hmm. I'm bought into that character. I'm bought into her character, and I'm bought into the Stark character because I would do the same exact thing. I'd stand right there, cross my arms, and say, okay, what did you learn?
Did you notice the little film nitpicky thing with the whole face getting slammed into the desk thing?
How do you mean?
Okay, so they slam his face into the ground, into the desk, and then he's got a bloody nose, right? And they cut away, then they cut back. He's still got that bloody nose. They cut away, they cut back again. He doesn't have the bloody nose. They cut away, they cut back, and then he's got the bloody nose again.
Wow.
And no. I was like... And so that's when I was sitting there going, okay, so that's... To me, a Peyton Reed thing. That's you're the director, or it's the editor or whoever, but someone's got to catch something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's not, I'm sure you have tons of footage with him with the makeup on, with the bloody nose makeup on. You could have inserted that in there. And it was little stuff like that where, I was like, I could just feel myself being like, I'm going to be a jerk. I'm going to find all of this stuff that's not good. And I didn't see this movie, and so I'm not going to like it. Like, it was that, it was like, I could feel myself doing that at the beginning of the movie. Right?
Okay, yeah.
And I don't know what it was in particular, but that's just the sort of way that I felt like I started out before the film won me over.
Got you.
So tell me about the tub and what was it that you were upset about that?
Well, I was upset that, shall I say I was upset, or shall I say I noticed it like you noticed that missing frame of his bloody nose? The physics of this water versus the Ant-Man.
Yes.
So he needed to run away from this gushing water, which was really filling up the tub really violently, really quickly, and the man only reached in and turned on the faucet once. It's not like he turned on both faucets mm-hmm. at full blast, right? So I guess they were trying to convey the fact that at that size, it looks violent. But I challenge anyone to go to their bathtub and just turn the spigot a quarter of an inch and watch what the water does at the bottom of the tub. All it does is pool. It doesn't gush like a tidal wave. It just spreads up the – okay, but I let that go.
It doesn't look like it's the ocean with white caps and waves. And
exactly.
Yeah.
But then when it caught up to Ant-Man, it caught him up, so it took him off of his feet, and now he's all up in this froth. And somehow it popped him out of the tub? Well, I don't understand that. I don't understand how when the water hit him, it bounced him up out of the tub like a quarter. And then when he hit the tile of the bathroom out of the tub, he shattered the tile.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he shattered it because he was small and dense, right?
Right.
So how did the water do that to him then if he was that goddamn dense?
Exactly.
So that was my nickname.
Yeah, he's definitely doing what we saw later in our second film with the Vision, where his density is like played with like no other, except this is just a filmmaking mistake instead of being a you know, like a character point.
Yeah, so I got that. I got this. I love the spectacle of it, but the physics wasn't working for me in that scene. Just mm-hmm. in that scene.
Right before that, what did you think of the sort of him as the burglar and the lock breaking and the him breaking in and getting the suit and all of that kind of thing?
Hella clever.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was for us to see that Scott is worth this attention. And that there's a reason why he winds up being manipulated into his position, because he's got skills mm-hmm. that Hank Pym needs. So it was, and I guess I didn't even remember in my second viewing how railroaded Lang was by Pym to get into this position to be this burglar that Pym needed to go get that yellow jacket suit that his rival was making
mm-hmm.
in order to save the world, which is that Corey Stahl's character, Darren Cross.
Mm-hmm.
That Cross was going to sell that to either the highest bidder or some kind of military something or other until they discover that he's selling it to Hydra. But even before that, they wanted to get that suit out of there because his intention was to sell it in military grade, and it would do the same thing that the Ant-Man suit did, only it had all these weapons and all this other kind of technology. So if you give that to an army, they're going to rule the world or change the world or do something drastic. So Pym wanted wanted somebody to get in his suit, go in there and steal that thing and get it out of Cross's hands.
Yeah. And I think what I liked about, we don't get a ton of really good villain time in a lot of the Marvel movies. That's kind of been like my typical view on them, is it's so focused on the heroes, like the villains kind of get pushed aside a little bit. But I thought that the Darren Cross storyline was actually pretty good, because here we do get him struggling. Like, he can't quite figure out what he's trying to figure out through the good chunk of the film. And usually you have like the bad guy, oh, I've got it figured out and now everything's fine and now you just have to stop me. Well, here we're going through probably like a half to two thirds of the film before he figures out how to actually shrink things. Without killing them or turning them into that gum or whatever it looks like.
That gross, disgusting little blob of goo.
Yeah. And so I kind of like that, because you got to see him. I mean, at the beginning, he's like, oh, yeah, okay, this is the bad guy. He's a jerk. And then as you go on, you're like getting to see the progression of him sort of losing it a little bit more and more and more and becoming even more obsessed by, you know, this attempt at trying to figure out how to duplicate Pym's work. And so I thought that that was nice, to where we got a little bit of progression from him. And then even though he doesn't physically seem like he's going to be he's not like a big muscular guy, I guess is what I'm getting to. I like the fact that he was a pretty competent, scary guy. Like, he looked pretty good in the suit. Like, I thought that design, and I thought that that whole end sequence when we get to there was, I thought it looked like he was a threatening character for our main character.
And I think they assisted with that appearance of threat when he shrunk the one guy down into that first blob of goo.
Mm-hmm.
Just just because he dissented, and I guess it's maybe there's shareholders meeting or something when he first proposed what to do with the yellow jacket suit. Maybe they were prospective buyers.
Yeah, I think it was prospective buyers.
Okay, so but then this one guy speaks up with not even that much opposition, just a little doubt, maybe a little just didn't sound all that positive about it. And Cross meets him in the bathroom and shoots him with something that turns him into a little blob of goo that he cleans up with a tissue and flushes down the toilet. And I'm like, oh, okay, villain, villain right now. I guess you're the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that was horrible and that was murder.
Yes. Yes, yes. Okay, so at this point, when we get past the tub and we start seeing we get the beginnings of the Evangeline Lilly, who I always have time for because, you know, Lost is one of my favorite shows. And we get a lot of fathers and daughters. Yes. And we get this sort of motif going. And I was like, oh, you know, how perfect, because I'm watching it with the little one, and it's about fathers, you know, and it's all this.
Woo! Yeah!
And it's, and I'm like, this is a very, like, 80s kid-friendly kind of action film, is what it felt like when it was working really well. Mm. It felt like it was in the same, like, tone as a Goonies or something like that. To where there's a little bit of danger, but then there's some jokes, and then there's some silly stuff, and then there's the movie trying to pull at your heartstrings a little bit, right? So it had all of those sorts of things in there together, and that was what I really enjoyed about it, and she just loved it, like absolutely loved the movie. One of the things that she was initially a little confused by, because like I said, I didn't realize that she didn't know who people were, was she was like, well, if he's one of the Avengers, once they meet up with Anthony Mackie, she's like, well, what are they fighting for then? Cause she had me pause it, and she's like, gets up, and I was like, oh, you've got a whole lot of this coming up next movie there.
No joke.
And so she's like, oh, they're just confused. And I said, yep. And she's like, oh, okay. And so what I thought that was interesting about that was I like that they showed, even though he kind of technically lost the fight, I love the fact that Anthony Mackie is kind of a badass in this universe.
No kidding.
And I read The Falcon, like I was saying, but I didn't really ever take him as that much of a, like a hardcore kind of a kick your ass kind of a guy.
Right.
And so I really appreciated that because you saw that obviously our titular character is going to come out on top in this situation, but we had, you know, Scott sort of figuring out how to shrink and how that was going to help him. But then we also saw that, you know, it's not like the Falcon was some kind of punk that couldn't figure things out either, because he had his own sort of tech and he was just a better fighter than him. He was just kind of getting out, you know, abilityed, I guess. But I thought that that was really well done. Like, I was really impressed with that whole choreography and that whole sort of special effects and everything. Like, I really, really liked the effect of Paul Rudd's character shrinking. Like, I thought Yes. that looked just like the books, where they have the progression.
Oh, right, right. The silhouettes that are just kind of echoed. Smaller, smaller, smaller until you get to the major figure.
Because, I mean, I don't know how many times I saw that with the Avengers books or with – especially with Spider-Man, to where you see all of the – him flipping or whatever, and all of them are just slightly dulled in the coloring, and then that final image is all in the bright reds and blues.
Yes.
And so you used to see that all the time. And so I thought that that kind of echoed – the sort of 80s and 90s comic book style that I don't really see as much anymore. It's just kind of more one image instead of that little progression.
Yeah. So. Well, when you're talking about the comic books, there's a thing that I didn't realize until, and I saw this movie when it came out in the theater, and I still didn't know the following thing about the comics. And that is that Scott Lang has been around since the 80s, mm-hmm. since the early 80s, I didn't actually realize that I bought the comic book that he – it must have been maybe the second or the third time he met with the Avengers back in the 80s off the rack, because the comic book that has Taskmaster on the Avengers comic that has Taskmaster on the cover with a green background drawn by George Perez – I bought that for the Taskmaster on the front.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember reading all the way through the comic, but I read it like 2 or 3 months ago and realized that Hank Pym and Janet Van Dyne, Wasp and Ant-Man, went into, well, did something, and they had Scott Lang with them as the other Ant-Man.
Mm.
As a matter of fact, Hank Pym was Yellow Jacket in this comic.
Mm-hmm.
And so I go to the index to find the first Ant-Man with Scott Lang, and that thing was like, don't make me look it up, but it's like 80, 82 or 83 or something. And his first story, his villain was Darren Cross.
Really? Wow. Really? Good find. I mean, good job on the guys that did the film too, because I would have never, like, I just thought that that character was completely made up just for this.
Nope. And so way back in the 80s, Darren Cross was Scott Lang, Ant-Man, first villain. And there's a notable difference, though, between the movie Darren Cross and the comic book Darren Cross.
Tell me.
I'll be glad to. In the comic book, he is a big, pink, muscular guy wearing only black Speedos.
Mm.
So they had their opportunity in the movie and they blew it.
They missed out on that.
Totally missed out. They could have had Corey Stoll just roaming around in his black Speedo, but no.
Wow. I don't know. I don't know how that would have gone over.
Maybe they wanted just to. Well, I don't know. I don't know why it wouldn't have worked.
Yeah,
maybe because they didn't want to assault the young one's eyes.
Maybe. In this 80s movie, and then you have him, and the big reveal is him just wearing the Speedo and he's pink.
Like, yeah. Yeah, but he was unusually pink, like in the comic books, the way they colored the Scarlet Witch's legs and arms at times. That kind of weird pink.
The like stocking pink.
Yeah, not just flesh, but weird pink.
Yeah, we're running out of red toner kind of pink.
Yeah.
It's just all faded out. So one of the things that I think we should talk about is I think this is, for me, one of the more, and I can't believe I'm saying this. This is one of the more satisfying third acts, like final battles that I remember up to this point in this sort of universe. Like, I was so entertained and engaged with this final battle in this little girl's room.
Yes.
With this train set. And I know that this is a thing that most people have talked about. Like, I haven't read this, but I guarantee this is what most people talk about. But I loved the fact that we had all of these humongous tossing of parts of the train, and it's this big epic sound and scope, and then it's just this little toy falling over.
Yes.
And I thought that was so good because, you know, I used to do that when I was a kid and I had the little Marvel action figures in the early 80s.
Mm.
Anna does that when she's playing with her little My Little Ponies, and she'll be in the bath and she'll be like squinching her face all up and she'll have her two hands out by her shoulders and she'll be pulling her hands together and she'll be doing like the kind of sounds. And I'm like, what are you doing? And she's like, oh, I was just playing. I'm like, okay, that's fine. And so she'll be doing like that sort of little superhero type battle.
Yes.
And
it's a big, big world in your imagination.
Absolutely.
Big, big world.
And I loved that. And I loved the ant that got huge and Thomas the train engine or whatever the hell it is that got humongous.
Mm-hmm.
I just loved all of that. I just thought that was so smart.
Yeah, clever, right?
Mm-hmm.
So did you wonder what was still Edgar Wright's stuff and what was What did he leave undone?
Yeah, what was Peyton Reed? I mean, since he wrote the script, since he co-wrote the screenplay with Joe Cornish, I imagine all of that stuff was in there. I think it's just a matter of like if the tone would have been slightly different, or if people were riffing and he would have been able to either rein them in or give them more leash or pick a different take or something. So I think it's just little things like that. I think the actual story and the structure and all of that, I would imagine that that's pretty much what he had come up with.
Good, because I want to give him his due, his propers, because that was some good stuff.
Yeah, that was really, really entertaining. I'm not a huge fan of Michael Peña. He doesn't do anything for me either way. Like I watch him and I'm like, oh, okay, he's fine. Like Luis is fine as his main buddy, but I didn't watch it and go, oh, that was a really good joke, or oh, that was really funny. He's just kind of like a guy that's kind of funny, but it's like a sort of funny, not a laugh out loud kind of a funny.
I must speak to that because I made me notes about that.
Okay.
So, and I didn't get some stuff until in the middle of the movie when it paid out. Mm-hmm. So the writers, the way they, and I guess they all do this, and I have to appreciate it when they do it well, is the elements that they put in dialogue will plant the seeds to things that will happen later in the movie. Right?
Right.
So when at the beginning of the movie, when Scott Lang is fighting in the prison, which is a goodbye ritual.
Yeah, which that was pretty good.
And he's supposed to fight this one big dude, and he tries, and he gets his behind whooped, and then that's his. Then he gets a scar, and that's his going away present, and everybody's friendly, and goodbye, have a good time. He goes and he meets Luis outside. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Luis sees the scar and says, the farewell ritual, and yes. And Luis said, did you knock him out? No. Or something like that. He said, well, I knocked him out. Mm-hmm. He said, I'm the only one in the prison that knocked him out. So in that line delivery, it tells us that Luis did time too, because he was in that prison and had to do that ritual, and that he can knock a person out with one punch. A big ass guy like that, he knocked out with one punch. I dismissed that until Luis was wearing his undercover uniform in trying to cover up Scott Lang's break-in, and he had to encounter some other guards that were working there, and in order for him to get something turned off, he ran into resistance, and he knocks this guy out with one punch. Mm-hmm. And as soon as he knocked the guy out with one punch, I thought, wait a minute, he's a bumbling motor mouth, corny joke telling, hyperactive little. Where did he get this? Ding. Oh, I see. He's got a skill that they told us about at the beginning of the movie. He can knock a person out with one punch.
I did not pick that up at all.
So even though it's like he got on my nerves too, though, because when they were planning on going into the Cross Technologies,
yeah,
to go steal the Yellow Jacket suit, and they had this whole plan laid out to cut off these lasers and to turn off this server and do all this and wipe this and do that. He was going to have to go in there in uniform and cover the ground while the other ones worked behind the scene. And he's talking about, well, I'll go in there, and in order to go undercover, I'll whistle, because people like to whistle. And I'm like, you son of a bitch, if you go in there whistling like a little asshole, I'll be real mad at you, because I'm not that happy with people whistling in the first place. And now he's going to walk up in there whistling? Real undercover, dude. You're going to be the only one in the whole goddamn place whistling. Shut up. Don't whistle.
What's so funny about this is, not more than a week ago, I was talking to a friend of mine at the golf course, and we've got so many old people that are at this golf course, and so many of these old people whistle. And I remember walking away from one guy who he's whistling while I'm talking to him. And then he says, oh, what?
Really? And okay, so the conversation is over at that point. Yeah. I'm like, and you'll figure it out later. I'm gone. I'm
so
out.
I give him the raised eyebrow look, and I'm like, you know, I repeat myself, and I'm all short and shitty, which I am regularly. And, and I was like, I got to go downstairs and do something else because I cannot handle all the whistling that's going on in this clubhouse right now.
Mm-mm. Listen, everybody who's listening and whistles, there's something you have to know. There's just something you have to know. Your whistling cannot be tuned out. If you're trying to make a good impression and display that you're in a good mood, then just smile, bro. Just smile. Smiling goes so far. But if you are whistling, if you are sending some sonic fucking signal throughout the echo chamber that is a subway car or a subway platform or station, anywhere that I'm within at least a mile of, and you're whistling, I will not be able to shut you up, and we're not even having a communication. So you're just imposing yourself on my last nerve.
I love it.
Which is the exact opposite of maybe what you're trying to do.
I don't think I've ever heard someone whistle and then someone else comes up to them and is like, you know what? You're really good at whistling. Let's have a conversation.
Right? Yeah. Or applause.
Really?
Wonderful job. What a nice performance. Thank you so much.
Oh, what a good performance of a bullshit non-song. That was really good.
If they even hit the right note.
Mm.
Oh, it's just annoying. It's just annoying. So Luis decided that he was going to go in there and whistle, and he already – and that – but when he punched the guy out, then it reminded me of the dialogue and the script writers and the story itself and the structure of this thing, and that made me appreciate it. Plus, he whistled It's a Small World After All, which was clever and cute.
That was cute.
Because he's Ant-Man. Yeah. So.
Well, that was another one of those where I'm like, all right, we're leaning really hard on this whole he's a little guy. And one of the things that I kept thinking of is, okay, he's making all these other things big. Are they going to let him be Giant Man in this? Are they going to let him be big? Because I hadn't seen Civil War yet.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Right? So I'm like, are they going to do that? And then they didn't. And I was like, oh, shit, that was kind of a missed opportunity. It's like, I wonder why they didn't do that.
Mm-hmm. Shows now you know.
Shows what now, I know.
Plus, it costs money. You know, they can they yeah. spend money on those little ants.
Yeah,
there's some good special effects for the ants after a while, but in the very beginning, they all looked like they were made out of metal.
Yeah, I could have done with all of the time spent with the different types of ants. Like, I didn't. I mean, they could have just been the same one kind of ant for all I cared. Like, it didn't really matter to me what different brand they were and stuff.
Ah, but Eric.
Yes.
Don't you see? The different types of ants were instrumental in the heist.
I see that, but I realize that. It's just like the first Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire where they go through all of the different mutant types of spiders that are there in that in those little glass chambers. And I'm like, all right, can we just get to it? Like, one of them's going to bite him.
Well, in that case, none of the other types of spiders mattered.
That's true.
So I understand. But
no, you're
this,
right.
You needed the electricity conducing ants to fry the servers and kill the information. You needed those fire ants to bite the the guards without killing them and make them out of commission. You needed all those types of ants.
You're the defenders of the ants. I get it.
I had to.
That is Alan's thing. That's right. So overall, I did quite enjoy it. I had some issues with it. There were some of the crew I didn't think was very funny, like I said. But I really did have a good time with it. I think I gave it a 4 out of 5 or a 3.5 out of 5, something like that on my little Letterboxd deal that I started doing again. Now that Netflix only does up and down, that's kind of ridiculous. So I gave it a thumbs up, like that means anything. But so I did quite enjoy it. Was there anything that you wanted to mention before we moved on to our second film?
Hell yes!
All right, lay it on me.
Well, you said Evangeline Lilly, you've got a lot of time for her because of Lost.
Yeah, yeah.
I, sir, didn't watch Lost.
Oh, okay.
ever. I tried the first episode, and then when the plane broke up in the sky, I'm like, I'm out. I'm out of this. I'm not watching this shit. And then I tried the second episode, and they did it again. And I'm like, fuck all of this. Mm-hmm. I'm not watching a plane crash from the inside, let alone from the outside. I'm out. So I'd never watched Lost.
Okay.
But so this movie was my first exposure to Evangeline Lilly.
Oh, really? Okay. What did you think of her?
Brother, man, I love me some Evangeline fucking Lilly.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you why. It seemed like, okay, so superhero movies, we have superhero movies, and we cast people in these parts that are these comic book characters, and they're just, they could be corny, they might wind up being overblown, but these little actors come to these studios and tries out or whatever, maybe their agent gets them this job, and they show up for work, and let me tell you something, they show all the fuck the way up. Because I got a feeling that Evangeline Lilly worked her ass off for this part. She leaned into every, it felt to me like she leaned into every single line. She was a strong, determined, angry woman. Right?
Well, yeah.
Her father, and she lost her mom young, so she had, and then she was sent off to some boarding school instead of her father helping her grieve for the loss of her mother. She don't know where her mom went. She don't know how her mom died. So she grows up with that. And she knows her father has this shrinking suit. She went, Evangeline Lilly is playing Hope Pym, who is Hank Pym's daughter. This character does not exist in the comic books. They made this character up for the movie.
Mm-hmm. I was hoping so, because I was like, I do not know. Like, granted, I haven't read all of the stuff, but I don't know this Hope character.
Yeah, no, they made her up for the movie. So her character's motivation is I want to earn my place in my father's research, and my father won't let me. So I'm going to work with this guy, and I'm going to find my way. However, she's working for her father behind the scenes so that she could get this tech and get it away from Cross and whatever. So she served as the badass. She served as the damsel in distress. She served as the love interest. She served as the vulnerable, hurt child. She did so many roles in one part, and I feel like she did every single last one of those roles so well, with such gravity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that I was all in every scene she was in. I'm just like all there.
And she's so, I mean, she's a little person. Like, she is not, she's vertically challenged.
Right. I didn't know that.
But she pulls off that physicality so well. Like, she looks like she could whoop some ass.
Yep.
Right? Even though she's not real big.
And see, so I didn't know she wasn't real big. I couldn't tell from the, I guess, the camera angles and things.
Yeah, well, I don't think Paul Rudd's a real big dude either. But all those actors are little anyway.
Well, then we're going to have to redefine what we mean by big and little.
That's right. Unless we're talking about like Chris Evans or Chris Hemsworth, which we'll talk about in our next movie, about the sort of mask that those gentlemen decided to put on.
So I'm saying go for the Ant-Man, stay for the Evangeline Lilly.
Stay for the Wasp.
And that was the payout at the end. In one of the teasers that after the credits,
mm-hmm.
is that she, I just love her part. So she knows that she's supposed to be, she wants to be in that Ant-Man suit doing the work that her father got Scott Lang to do. She has not reconciled why he went to get this criminal to do this heist instead of letting her do it, because she can fight, she's smart, she knows the technology, she wants in that suit. She doesn't realize that her father is not letting her get in that suit because her father lost her mother the same way. Because we did have the Wasp, we did have Janet back in the day when Hank Pym was Ant-Man, and she shrunk down, and the Wasp shrunk down to subatomic, and he lost her. So he's now guarding his daughter from getting hurt like that or getting lost like that. She doesn't get that until Scott has to sit her down while she's really mad and say, I'm expendable. Mm-hmm. That's why your father won't let you in the suit, because you can lose me, but he can't lose you. And that's when she softens up and she cooperates with the training. And that's where you see she's more of a badass, where she fights with Scott and punches him in the jaw, in the nose, mm-hmm. flips him all over the basement. She's just badass.
Yeah, she's good. And what I liked about that end sequence was I never know how – well, I guess I didn't know how Anna was going to deal with the post-credits stuff, because she didn't know – you know, they go and they see Bucky and they see Cap and they see the Falcon and they're like, oh, I have a guy. And she's like, oh, it's Iron Man. Like, yep. Who are those other guys? You know, like, oh, one's Captain America. One's one of his friends. And she's like, okay. And then we have the, you know, we have the Wasp one, and she goes and is shown the sort of Wasp suit, and she's like, she gets to be Iron Man too, or Ant-Man too, and is like, from sitting down to standing up, and has got her little hands in the air, like, in victory. And mm-hmm. so she is, you know, counting, because I told her, I was like, well, they have a sequel to this that's going to be out probably next year or the year after. And she's like, well, can we go see that in the movie theaters? So she is yes. all in with the Wasp. And yes, I said, yes, I go, yes. you know, I said, Anna, did you know that the original Wasp, I tell her, you know, that, you know, the older guy, his wife that disappeared, she's like, yeah. I go, did you know that one of her jobs was she was a fashion designer? Because that's what Anna wants to do when she gets older.
Oh,
and
wow.
she's like, oh, I could be the Wasp. And so she's oh. always like looking up for little stuff to be for Halloween. And so that's her current favorite is that's the leader in the clubhouse right now is being the Wasp.
Careful. And don't make me get all misty up in here.
And so that's what she wants to do, which is a far cry from her wanting to be, wanting us to dress up like Star Trek, The Next Generation characters, which we've been watching. And she, of course, would be Data, she says. And I was going to be Captain...
She said, of course she's well,
she's like,
Data?
She's like, well, I'm Data. Oh.
Okay.
Because that's her favorite. And she's like, and you could either be Worf or Captain Picard, because sometimes you can be grumpy. Okay. And she's like, and Mommy would have to be Counselor Troi with her fancy dresses that has her boobs out. Okay. I was like, well... I was like, at least you got it all figured out.
Now, don't tell me she said with your boobs all sticking
well,
out.
Well, she says boo-boos is what she says.
Okay.
With her boo-boos all right. out, yeah.
Hello. Hello, 21st century kids.
That's right.
I guess we all speak anatomically correct these days.
So that was good. So she quite enjoyed it. She's very much looking forward to the sequel. Before we get into our second film, though, we watched The Avengers the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, you got to figure out who all these different people are. And much like when the first time I saw it, the first bit with, you know, the whole headquarters crashing and sort of disintegrating, she was a little not digging that as much because it was, you know, it's got a little bit more of a grown up feel to it. That part of the movie does.
Mm.
But once we got to the female characters and Black Widow specifically when she tricks Loki into saying too much, she thought that was great.
Mm.
And so then now she's debating on who she wants to be. And then when we watch this next movie, she's like, well, maybe I should be the Scarlet Witch girl because I really like her too. So she's got a conundrum on her hands now.
Well, she's got good reasons to like Scarlet Witch because I really liked the Scarlet Witch.
Elizabeth Olsen, I mean, we can get into this in just a second, but she's fantastic. Before we get into our second film, is there anything else that you wanted to say about Ant-Man? I want to make sure that I didn't cut you off on any other thoughts about that film.
Well, okay, one last thing I think is important, and that is why I think it's Edgar Wright. Also his contribution to the Marvel, the MCU, mm-hmm. is that storytelling device that he used, that they used, Luis, the same little hyperactive little nutball, little whistle boy, his way of exposition in telling just a big old chunk of information was to say it in his old hyper way, but then the camera pans to the people that he's talking about saying the things that Luis is saying they say, but you hear Luis's voice instead of the people in the scenes. And I thought that was so brilliant.
Yeah, that was good. That is very, that is something that's out of an Edgar Wright film, like a Shaun of the Dead or a Hot Fuzz or something like that. That is with all of those swipes that go from back and forth to different characters and they're all in the same voice. That's an Edgar Wright thing for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think that that must have been left over. But yeah, I like that too. I thought that was good.
And it was done to such great effect in the beginning to set up the just the entrance of Scott Lang and why he went to go steal something out of this old man's basement, not knowing that he was going to wind up with the Ant-Man suit. And then finding out that Hank Pym just planted all those clues to get him to steal the suit.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end, it also serves – at the end of the movie, it also serves to set up – the entrance to this next movie.
You're right. That's right. So our second film, it is from the following May. It is from 2016, and it is Captain America: Civil War.
Buck, do you remember me?
Your mom's name is Sarah. You used to wear newspapers in your shoes.
You're a wanted man.
I don't do that anymore.
Well, the people who think you did are coming right now. And they're not planning on taking you alive.
Captain, while a great many people see you as a hero, there are some who'd prefer the word vigilante. You've operated with unlimited power and no supervision. That's something the world can no longer tolerate.
I know how much Bucky means to you. Stay out of this one. Please. You'll only make this worse.
You saying you'll arrest me?
There will be consequences.
Captain, you seem a little defensive. Well, it's been a long day. If we can't accept limitations, we're no better than bad guys.
That's not the way I see it.
Sometimes I want to punch you in your perfect teeth. I just want to make sure we consider all our options.
Because people that shoot at you usually wind up shooting at me, too.
You know what's about to happen. Do you really want to punch your way out of this?
What do we do?
We fight.
Sorry, Tony. You know I wouldn't do this if I had any other choice. But he's my friend. So was I.
And the IMDb plot synopsis, which is not from Marvel this time, goes like this. With many people fearing the actions of superheroes, the government decides to push for the Hero Registration Act, a law that limits a hero's actions. This results in a division in the Avengers. Iron Man stands with the act, claiming that their actions must be kept in check, otherwise cities will continue to be destroyed. But Captain America feels that saving the world is daring enough and that they cannot rely on the government to protect the world. This escalates into an all-out war between Team Iron Man and Team Captain America while a new villain emerges. So once again, that is from IMDb. That is not something that I write. So, Alan, tell me about what you thought of this in the theater.
So I got lost in some details of this when I was watching this movie in the theater.
Okay.
I got lost in the spectacle of the fights,
mm-hmm.
and the choreography. Like you were mentioning, some of that choreography in Ant-Man. Well, buddy,
yeah, it's pretty intense.
Turned it up to 19 in this movie. It was just I don't know why I didn't watch this again until just now to see this movie. But so some of the details of the plot line and how and motivations of the characters and why this would happen this way and that way. The only thing that I got out of that in watching it in the theater was just this tragedy happening in Lagos and it turning into the United Nations saying that you have to sign these accords, the Sokovia Accords, because a lot of people are getting hurt and killed and you superheroes are not acting responsibly. So I missed all – that's the only thing that I really caught from – I mean I didn't not catch the other stuff, but it, I didn't get the details in my head and the timelines totally straight when I watched it in the movie theater.
Okay. So what – you were – but similarly overwhelmed by it though and nostalgic and all of the same sort of things from Iron Man – or from Ant-Man? God, I keep doing that.
From Ant-Man when Ant-Man entered. But even then, no, because it had been a year and a half since Ant-Man? Or was it – it wasn't the same year, was it?
No, it was like around 8-9 months, I think. Because I think it was the late summer, early fall, and then this was the following May.
Okay, so I probably slept once or twice since from between the movies. So I didn't make the bridge and the connection until Ant-Man showed up in Civil War. But I was what I was feeling was just really happy to see the characters. Just same thing, yeah, the same thing. To see the characters just fleshed out. Walking and talking and what they sound like, what they look like in the form of a real person. I just, when they use the powers, mm-hmm. I just got so giddy.
See, I just got so giddy. This is why you're on the show. Because it's like if someone that doesn't have a history with the characters, they'd say, like, yeah, they're doing a bunch of powers and stuff. Great.
But they might not know is that in the comic book, Scarlet Witch and Vision got married. So in every scene that you have Wanda and the Vision together, you know that these two characters have history. And so in the movies, they're using a little bit of that pre-knowledge plus for anybody who might not know that. They're developing a relationship there. So for the comic book fan, that's something for us. For the casual moviegoer, that's something for them. I loved every bit of it.
Yeah, I thought that that was great because I don't think that's not really on screen in terms of their like falling for each other or anything really like that. But you do get a little sense of there could be something there when you're watching them interact.
Well, for the first part, when Cap comes into Wanda's room and Wanda is sitting on her bed with her legs crossed, mm-hmm. while they're talking and she's trying to decompress from what happened in Lagos, because they were going after some terrorists who was trying to steal a biological weapon. And, the leader of that it was Crossbones from Cap's, second movie.
Mm-hmm.
Fight choreography was bananas.
Oh, that was super good. I wrote that down that I really liked that cold Crossbones sequence.
Right? So, I mean, I'll digress right now because the things that stand out in my mind right now is Cap jumping, kicking a truck and,
yes.
and cue balling the truck into a guy.
Yeah.
And doing it so hard that the guy goes splatter against a wall. So Cap kicks a truck. He kicked a truck. The truck was all four tires on the ground. And he kicks the truck so hard that the truck and cue balls this up. And the Falcon, just like you're saying, you didn't know the Falcon was a badass. And he wasn't maybe – I don't know how bad of an ass he was in the comics. But this Falcon – in this movie with these goddamn wings zooming speeding all over the ground. And then he spins in place and he kicks and he's got missiles coming out of his wings. oh my gosh, this guy. So, okay, fight choreography. And then Crossbones gets cornered. They find the biological weapon. They stop him. Black Widow is badass. She kicks four guys' ass at the same time, at least four, maybe four. Mm-hmm. Cap gets Crossbones. They're fighting. Crossbones is about to blow himself up. Wanda comes from out of nowhere, contains the blast, so poor Crossbones gets incinerated in this bubble of hex power. And then, I guess because it's just such a strain on her to contain it, she thrusts him up in the air, and he completely blows up and kills I don't know how many people in this building. So that was a big tragedy, right? And that was the reason why the UN said, okay, you guys are going too far. We have to get some accords in place. You dropped Sokovia on a bunch of people. You killed all them in the Avengers Ultron movie. We got to do something. Mm-hmm. Not directly after that, because they kind of montage to Tony Stark and his I guess psychotherapy technology where you can go back in time.
The CGI Tony, the young Tony.
Yes, that again looked flawless to me. It did. Mm-hmm. I didn't see an Uncanny Valley at all.
It looked a little like it was strange to me because I was like, okay, so are they doing the X-Men 3 thing where it's supposed to be young, or is that really him and they're just dressing him different? And it was tough for me to tell. I was like, I can't really tell if this is actually him or if it's CGI until the very end when they're both in the sequence. And then I'm like, oh, okay, I can see it a little bit here. But I mean, that was really, really well done. I was shocked at how well that was done.
Yeah. And they were setting up for us the emotional resonance that was the last day that he saw his parents alive. Hope Davis did a wonderful rendition of Try to Remember. The 3rd of September, the last of September, some kind of thing, playing on the piano, mm-hmm. got my heartstrings, because they played that while Wanda was looking at the damage that she did, right? And then it segued into that. So I thought that was good cinematography. I thought that was another pulling on your heartstrings, but it had a purpose.
Right. And who, let's see, when he leaves that sequence and they talk about how Pepper is not, they're not really together anymore.
Right.
And that's when he meets Alfre Woodard, I think.
Yes.
And yep. That was the sequence where I was like, I kind of was on the same vibe as him thinking, oh yeah, this is just another like special agent or something. Mm-hmm. And I was just kind of not really that engaged with it. And then when she starts talking about how it was her son, and I'm like, God, where has Alfre Woodard been? Because, you know, like, I remember her most from Star Trek First Contact.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what has she been doing? Because I have not seen her enough recently because I really enjoy her.
Did you get your Moby Dick Ahab?
you broke your little ships. yeah, we haven't got quite to that yet. I think we're in like season 5 of Next Generation with the little one. We watch it every Thursday. It's our little Star Trek night.
Oh, well, your little one's going to graduate high school by the time you get through it all.
Well, we didn't start it until this school year or so. So we'll be
right. It sounds like you're watching it in real time, though, like once a week. It's a 10-year season, bro.
Well, we'll get to it. It'll be all right.
Okay. Get it.
She's digging it. That's like we read a little bit of Harry Potter every night too, and that's taking us a while. But she's all right.
Well, you got time.
Mm-hmm.
Let her enjoy her childhood.
That's right. She's sleeping on the couch right now.
I envy her.
So we had the CGI Tony Stark. We had the hallway with Alfre Woodard. I loved the fact that we kind of subtly get introduced to Baron Zemo. I was like, oh, shit, I didn't know he was in this. I was like, okay.
Did you know he was Zemo before they said his name?
Once he started talking, I was kind of guessing that that's who it would be. But, you know, I was like, well, there's plenty of Russian-type people or Nazi-type people they could pick. Because the it's kind of a muddled sort of accent. So I was like, well, I don't know really what they're, who they're going for in this. Mm-hmm. But once they said Zemo, I was like, oh, okay. And so then, you know, it's the same thing with the Vision and the Scarlet Witch stuff, is I had to fight the temptation to pause and to tell both of the ladies, like, okay, well, this is who this is, and this is why this is important. And so, you know, I looked at the runtime and was like, holy shit, it's almost 3 hours. Like, I'm just going to let this run. Like, they don't need to, they don't need to know all of this extra information.
Yeah. But so the thing about Alfre Woodard was, and this started to get under my skin a little bit, is that, so she, when she confronted Tony about her son was one of the people killed in Sokovia when that big old thing, when that big chunk fell, she indicated that he didn't care. That the Avengers just left and they didn't care, right? And then on, let me see, it from the basement to the television or something where it went straight to T'Chaka, the king of Wakanda, and he was, and he's talking about how he lost Wakandans in that Lagos explosion. Right. And he indicated as well that the heroes were indifferent and didn't care. So when he said that, I think it was on television, because I think at that point it segued into Wanda's bedroom. She's watching him on television. And then the commentator points her out specifically, says, I don't know if they call her Scarlet Witch.
Because they say that it's Maximoff's fault, right?
Yes. So she's musing on that, and Steve comes into Captain America to you and me, comes into the bedroom to console her and let her know it's not just her fault. He made a delay in judgment because Crossbones used the name Bucky. And when he was having that conversation with her, Vision walked through her wall into her bedroom, and she said to him, haven't we talked about this before?
Oh, that's right. Yes, that's right.
So that was a big, long, round-the-block way for me to say that Vision and Wanda had been having some kind of relationship indicated with that one line. Whether it was just friendly, maybe he just came in for bonbons, but...
Yeah, you're right. You know, one of the things that I could go a little bit... I could do for a little bit more of is... So we had that Crossbones sequence, which I love the fact that Crossbones was like kind of kicking his ass for a little bit. And I was like, yeah, look at this. Like, he actually seems like a dangerous guy, and whatever he kept doing with his hand, I was like, well, that's cool. Like, it's either like some kind of super punch shit, or then he'd have some kind of like a gun or some kind of a missile come out of it or whatever. And I was like, well, that's kind of neat. And then
it looked like hydraulic punching things on his, around his wrists.
Yeah, and so his fists. I thought that was kind of interesting, at least to where it was given, you know, it was giving Steve a little hard time. And for it being a movie called Captain America, I mean, he gets his ass kicked in this movie.
I consider that movie as an Avengers movie. Mm-hmm. Even though it was his movie, it was so – all the Avengers were there, and all the Avengers fought, and all the Avengers had screen time and character developments and things. I think it was just another Avengers movie that they just didn't want to call Avengers.
Yeah, I think you're right. So we have that whole sequence, and like we mentioned, she's unable to sort of contain the whole explosion, and it blows up part of the building. I wish we would have had a little bit more of her explaining or mentioning or dealing with the frustration that – like in the books, her powers aren't predictable. Like, she can't really control them very well.
Right. They didn't do that, did they? Because in the books and the comics, it's Hex power, which is a mutant ability to tap into some kind of Hex chaos magic.
Yeah.
So she doesn't have a lot of control over that.
Yeah. She can't say A to B. It's like A, and then I guess it's going to go somewhere over towards B. You know, it's going to be a little unpredictable.
Yeah.
And I thought that would have been something to either have. And I guess that's my only real critique with the film. Like, I really liked it. I liked it more than I liked Ant-Man. I had a really good time with the film. My only critique is at times I wish there was a little bit more room to breathe, like what we see in Iron Man 3, where at the beginning of that, where he's still dealing with what happened in Avengers. And here, like, I wish she would have been kind of pleading to Cap or to the TV even, saying, like, it's not my fault. Like, I can't, like, I physically cannot control what is going on, and I'm trying, you know, and that sort of a monologue, like, that she's trying to do the right thing. She just can't do it.
And along the same line is when it's getting under my skin that, okay, so we had Alfred Woodard say that Tony didn't care. We had King T'Chaka of Wakanda said that they were indifferent. And then when Thunderbolt Ross comes in as the Secretary of State now, promotion, when he's telling them, okay, so these are the Sokovia Accords. You guys need to sign these because the UN thinks that you guys are – he didn't even say that the UN thinks you're – he said, you seem unconcerned about what danger you leave behind or the threat that you guys pose to the Ashes, and you seem unconcerned. So that's the third time they got accused of being unconcerned. And I'm like, bitch, that you see that woman right there? Her brother gave his life. You know, he's dead now. So, like, why are we accusing these people who go out there to fight and risk their lives and get their asses kicked all over these battlefields of not caring? Why are they doing this if they don't care? Mm-hmm. So I thought it was just real harsh. And I understand they're angry, and I understand you don't want to see innocent people die in the crossfires of this stuff. But to accuse them of not caring was – I just thought it was kind of villainous.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's – I think that's the thing you run into a little bit in these films, because it is such a big story and there's so much to do and there's all the special effects and fighting. It's little moments like this that I think would make the film a lot more of a film instead of just a, you know, oh, let's just skip ahead till the next fight kind of a movie.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, having them take an extra beat, because although I liked the fact that everyone was like intellectually highbrow enough to have a discussion about should they sign this or should they not, It did feel to me like they were just talking at each other, that nobody was actually listening to each other. Mm-hmm. You know, that they weren't talking to each other. They were just waiting for their turn to talk instead of having like some frustration and some hands through the hair and some, you know, some standing up and be like, no, you don't get what we're talking about. There's no like break in the way that they're speaking. It's just all line, Captain America's line, Iron Man line, Scarlet Witch line. You know, it's just very like same delivery over and over.
With one exception.
Mm-hmm.
Because exactly what you're talking about, I understand. But one thing stood out to me, and that was when Don Cheadle.
Oh yes,
with
Don Cheadle.
Brody, addressed Steve and said that was just a little bit arrogant of his point of view. And I just thought his delivery of his line felt to me so natural, the way he just put his scene out there. And he's for signing the accords. He's telling everybody that he thinks that there needs to be some kind of oversight. There needs to be some kind of governance on what they do. Steve's retort to that was, well, these are people that are telling us, and people's agendas change.
You're right.
So I can't trust their agenda, so why should I let them tell me whether we should go fight this thing? And what if they tell us we can't go fight this thing that we think we should fight? So I understand about the delivery of lines, but I thought Don Cheadle's delivery was just a little bit above.
And I like the fact that you're pointing that out, because Don Cheadle's role in the film is to give Tony Stark another reason why he needs to go after Bucky, right? Because once he finally gets caught in the friendly fire and goes down, and then it's like, okay, now shit's real. Like, now we're not just playing around and we're not just patty caking, you know? And so it does make sense that he does get the one, like, real good delivery. Now, whether that's just a happy accident or whether that was planned, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But I think that's good.
Whether Don Cheadle is just a badass.
Yeah, he is, though. He's good. He is good. I like Don Cheadle in this movie. I also, when we haven't mentioned him yet, I loved Chadwick Boseman as T'Challa.
And that African accent.
Woo!
I can't, I don't know how to do that accent. I could never, they are really good at an African accent. I want to know whether or not his father has that accent in real life, or is that an American, African American actor that put it on?
Let's see. His name is John Kani, and he was born in South Africa. So that's probably the way that he speaks.
Brother. And what about Chadwick Boseman?
Yeah, that was good. You know, when he came on, and it was when he first takes off the Black Panther sort of helmet mask thing. And he's given the side eye, right? And he's given like all of the smoky sort of look that he's got. I look over and my wife does this like little like sits up in her chair sort of move. And I was like, what do you think you're doing? She's like, this gives me like a And so I put, Black Panther is a smooth man, but I'm not sure how much I like him. And it was just because of that. He was born in South Carolina. So that's put on.
All right.
I mean, I thought it was good.
See, this is what I mean about these actors showing up and doing the damn thing. They're not just, oh, let me get this paycheck. I'm supposed to be Black Panther, whatever. Mm-hmm. They really just step into the role. Oh, and inhabit the shit. They just get it. I was so impressed. Like, this is not just a comic book coming up. This is Black Panther right now. Mm. This is Black Panther before me. So his whole motivation was that, during the address for the Sokovia Accords, T'Chaka, the king of Wakanda, is congratulating Black Widow for being there and the Avengers cooperation and signing the accords. And then this big old bomb blows up outside and kills poor man and almost everybody in there. And so then that makes T'Challa, his son, the king. But he's pissed off because somebody killed his dad. Mm-hmm. And the news is saying that that person was Bucky. They have his face on the camera saying he set off this bomb. Go find him. He's the Winter Soldier. Now that's the thing that I thought was strange. And that was that everybody knew who the Winter Soldier was already.
Yeah, no shit. I was like, wait a minute. Why is this is like everyone knows who this guy is now? Like, okay.
I didn't know what that was all about. I mean, they had to fish Steve Rogers out of an iceberg, and it was a big old thing for him to be in Times Square and all this stuff. But Bucky comes out of the ice. Nobody even blinks. Mm-hmm. He's the Winter Soldier. Oh, he's running around killing people. Oh, okay. So we got to do – like, come on. He came from the same place that Captain America did. They're both the same age. Nobody's amazed?
Yeah, really. He's got a metal arm that he uses like a mother during that first fight sequence.
Yeah, no, that I got a little like, come on. They're only shooting the palm of his hand?
Yeah. Well, and there was things where I was like, well, okay, so what the hell is this thing? Like, what is this arm? Like, is the arm could do whatever the choreography needed the arm to do.
Yeah.
Is kind of what it was like.
But I know that if somebody's aiming at you with a submachine gun or a machine gun or however many degrees of machine it is, I don't think all the bullets are going to go directly to the size of a space like the palm of your hand. I think maybe it'll stitch up the underside of your hand, maybe go up your side, maybe hit you in the face a little bit, but no. Mm-hmm. He locked it with just the palm of his hand. So it was excellent choreography. So many good fight scenes. It's just so good.
Yeah.
But some of that strained credibility a little bit.
Yeah, I thought
movie. I know.
Right. Yeah, I like that. That's the thing that we're talking about. Meanwhile, we just talked about like hex powers and shit.
And the Falcon flying at maybe Mach 10 through the streets.
Oh, you know, one of the things that I loved about that when they're running, I loved the fact that all of them were fast as hell and they were like running past cars.
Seriously.
I was like, oh, look at that. I was like, because that's the thing that was in Captain America 1 that they don't really show that much.
Right.
Remember where he's running so fast and he like can't stop because he's not used to running the speed that he's running?
In the first movie?
In the first Captain America.
I don't remember in the first movie.
Yeah, he's running for the first time And he's like damn near running up the side of the wall because he can't slow. He can't figure out how to slow down and stuff yet.
Okay. Anyway. I don't remember it, but it's certainly on display in this movie.
It was when he, it was the first time when Chris Evans was wearing a really tight shirt, and I was like, holy shit, look at this guy. Like,
well, that would be the reason why I didn't remember the running.
You're too busy staring at the very defined pecs.
Little distracted.
Yeah. Well, I'll say that the other time that my wife did a little shimmy in her seat was when, is the part that you mentioned on Twitter today. It's the part where he's pulling the helicopter back towards him.
Yes.
And they've got that perfect mid shot where it's got him flexing his biceps on both sides.
Very functional.
And he's got it like one way. He's got it like the pull up way, and then he flips it around. So it's like the bicep way. And I'm like, oh,
how do you do that?
I'm sitting there looking at that going, oh shit, that's just for the ladies right there. Like, give me a break. And I look over at her and she's got like this little smirk on her face. And I'm like, this movie knows what it's doing.
Aww.
But yeah, I mean, it's like Chris Evans, like, God, good for you, kind of a thing, you know?
I want to believe that some of that is CGI.
I want to believe it.
Oh, I definitely know it's CGI that he didn't hold no goddamn helicopter back from flying off of a platform.
That is true. It does make me think, like, I don't know that I've ever had a friend that I'd do all this shit for. I mean, I like people. I get along with some people, but I don't know if I'd be able to do that.
But what if your friend was the only friend you had from the days that you grew up 50 years ago that came through the ice and was the only person that knew who you were, where you were from, really identified with, and everybody else is just a strange new world?
I mean, he seems to be getting along with Sharon Carter all right. And now, how weird is that, though? I mean, that's a weird comic book thing that doesn't really get brought up all that much.
Right.
But it's Peggy Carter, and now it's her niece.
Yes.
And so it's like, is that kosher, or is that not? I don't know.
Incestuous, possibly? Yeah. I don't know. Make your skin crawl a little bit?
I did love the fact that all of the women in this movie were badasses.
Yes, Lord.
So
they got their asses kicked at times too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't like real posy, like, oh, here, I'm just going to patty cake you and then you're going to fall over or something.
In my heels and my stilettos.
Yeah, really. It wasn't anything like that.
Right. It was when there's so many different convolutions of storyline.
Oh yeah.
But in another fight scene, after they captured Winter Soldier, and Baron Zemo goes in and pretends as though he were the guy that's supposed to be interviewing the captive Winter Soldier, he uses the trigger words to turn him into
the Winter Soldier.
Mm-hmm. So that now he was under Zemo's control to escape. He runs into Black Widow and Sharon Carter. Is that right?
Yep.
And he kicks their ass.
Yes, he does. Yep.
Slams their asses into walls, into tables. I'm like, well, okay, shit. All right. Yeah. No, yes. If somebody's fighting, and regardless of gender, if you're not stronger, yeah, you're going to get slammed. Mm-hmm. You're going to get slammed. Mm-hmm. So they were very even-handed with the treatment of gender in this, and I appreciated it.
You know, this is something that I've been trying to find a way to shoehorn in, and I'm just going to say it now. One of the things that I'm really missing in the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe, or even now that DC's sort of looking like they're getting their act together a little bit more, is I so desperately want to have Natalie Mendoza, who is the main character from my favorite horror film ever, which is The Descent.
Oh, hell no.
Which is the caving movie. And it's 12 years old now, so I'm not sure her age or anything like that. And I know how Hollywood is with women once they're past like 25, right? But
bastards.
When I was watching The Descent, she was the most believable, like, she looked like a badass woman. She didn't look like some skinny little model, right? Okay. Like, she had, like, she had, like, legs, right? And looked like she would just whoop someone's ass. And I was so taken in that movie by her. And I remember when I first watched that, telling Rachel, because I believe we reviewed it, and she was really pissed that we ended up talking about it, because she had to watch it.
I don't remember that. I don't remember that show.
I think we've done that. I think that's
a, find that show.
I think that's an old, old one. But I believe we did that, and I'm just really, really taken by her and by her, like, physical space that she takes up, to where we have these people like Chadwick Boseman, and I think that Chris Evans does a good job, and Anthony Mackie does a really good job. And I think the ladies in here are fine, but I just think that she has, like, just a different shape to her. She's, like, a little bit shorter and a little bit thicker.
Okay.
And I feel like she's somebody that would really be good in this type of a movie. You know what I mean? She almost looks like Gina Carano from Haywire, the former MMA fighter, to where she's, like, got a little bit of that muscular build to her. And I think Natalie Mendoza is fantastic in Descent. And I watch that movie, like, once a year because it scares the shit out of me.
So, like, why do you do that to yourself? This is why I'm never, ever, ever, ever going to watch them. Never going to watch the movie.
I think it's because it's the it's that sort of, like, heart in your throat feeling before something scary is going
to
happen.
No, hell to the no.
It's like the reverse of when you see Spider-Man on screen for the first time with the Avengers. It's like your heart's in your throat, but it's like the opposite of that. It's like a terrible feeling instead of a good feeling.
Okay, well, ladies and gentlemen, you make your minds up whether that's the experience you want to have.
That's right.
Alan knows what Alan likes. Alan don't like that.
So let's talk about Tom Holland as Peter Parker, as Spider-Man in this.
Queens on the screen.
It's from Queens.
That was one theater experience that I had that I didn't understand what was happening, because Alan doesn't watch trailers and Alan doesn't read the press about movies coming out. Alan waits until he sees the movie because Alan doesn't like spoilers.
Nice.
Alan is also a freak about it as well. So if you follow Alan on the Facebook, Alan will get on your nerves after a while, because when something is coming out, everybody's posting about it, and Alan's the little stick in the mud saying, "I hate spoilers. I wish people wouldn't keep posting."
That's
me.
What was it that you said just recently? There was something that you weren't wanting to be spoiled.
The casting of the new Doctor.
Oh yes, that's right, the new Doctor thing. And I was
I knew there was no way I was going to avoid it, but I had to, with my ass, I had to say something before they did it.
Because I remember watching that, and I was like, okay, I don't know who this girl is. I've never seen a Doctor Who show in my life. So, I understand this is a big deal for the culture in general, but I was like, I don't have any strong opinion about it. And then I saw people just losing their minds about it.
Losing they fucking minds.
Yeah, really.
Just ridiculous. I mean, that's a whole nother topic on a whole nother show.
That's right.
What is the problem? But that kind of thing. So I would have loved it if they never told anybody until the very first airing of the very first episode on who the new Doctor is. And then all this could be happening and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So I didn't understand or know that there was going to be a Spider-Man in this. Well, I think one image leaked through to me, because people started making Spider-Man's appearance with Captain America's shield.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Started making that their icon on Facebook. So it's not even like I was looking for anything. If I was a friend of a person and they replaced their face with Spider-Man holding Captain America's shield, then I knew he was going to be in the movie. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
I sure didn't know that he was going to be in it as much as he was. Like, he was in it way more than I thought he was going to be.
Exactly. So when they throughout the whole movie, they kept making these big title cards for the change of location.
Oh, yep, yep.
And when they made the title card, the change of location was Queens. People in my theater would start to clap. And I was like, why are they clapping now? They've been changing scenarios all over this whole movie. Now we're going to Queens and people are clapping. Why? And then we go into Peter's hallway. He opens the door and walks into his apartment. There's Aunt May, or May. He doesn't even call her aunt anymore. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Don't get me started. And I'm like, oh shit. Wow. We're not just only getting Spider-Man. We're getting Peter Parker and his aunt too. So yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with Marissa Tomei as Aunt May.
Never, ever. It's the relationship. The relationship between Peter and his aunt. This seems more like she is his big sister because he calls her May.
Mm-hmm.
All my comic book reading life, it's been Aunt May. Now it's just May.
Well, if you thought I had time for Evangeline Lilly. Marissa Tomei, I mean, she's been around in my life for a long time.
All your life, I bet.
Yeah. Now she's May. She ain't Aunt May.
Yeah, now she's just May flirting with Tony Stark. Or him with her. So his entrance was real good. I liked it. I liked his part. I liked his humor. I liked his youth and his energy. I liked what he gave to the big fight. I like that he alone took on the Winter Soldier and Falcon.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll allow it.
Yeah, so the Peter Parker stuff, I thought that, it's like I loved it despite myself because he was chatterboxing so much, and I was like, God, just shut up. And then I was like, oh, wait, that's what his character is. I was like, that's really... And I was like, that's really well done.
There you go.
And, you know, Anna, of course, is like, oh, it's Spider-Man. She's like, do you like Spider-Man? I was like, do I like Spider-Man? I was like, I got like 12 boxes of Spider-Man down in the basement if you want to see that. Yeah, I got more Spider-Man than I know what to do with. But I was like, oh, I guess that is how he would be. Like, he would be the annoying guy in this big group. Yep. And I did like the fact that they did have some sort of some sequences where they'd give some credence kind of to either the sort of Bendis style of writing or the way that comics used to be written where we'd have long monologues instead of just snappy back and forths They did have sequences in there where the people would be talking a little bit. And I really liked the fact that, you know, you had Hawkeye and Black Widow sort of like just play fighting and they were just kind of like, you know what? You were letting her take advantage of you, or you weren't taking that serious or whatever. And
you were pulling your punches.
You're pulling your punches. That's right. That's what it was.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, they were former spies together. Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And while they were tussling, they were like, we're still friends. Right. Yeah. And he said, it depends on how hard you hit. And then Scarlet Witch just got into the middle of it and just blew her away. And so you were pulling your punches.
Right.
Like, we have time for this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was nice that it was kind of different people had different levels of how serious this actually was.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's nice. Like, that gets people out of just, it's the same writer, so it's the same tone for everyone. And it just sounds the same for everybody. I was like, that makes a lot of sense. And I love...
Let me write that down. That's a note I need to take.
And I love the fact that that we get Ant-Man in there. And he's kind of like, I don't know what I'm doing, but here we go. You know, and that kind of a personality. I thought that was a nice mix.
And like you were saying, your little one was impressed about how long he had run in the bathtub. He did the same thing on that airport, kind of, I guess, that the runway staircase outside
like
the airplane.
Yeah, like the top of the stairs where he's just running forever.
He was running. It was like he's running a football field. I was like, "Damn, where is he running?" And then they pulled the camera back, and he was on that platform. Like, shit, he's tiny.
I was sitting there watching that going, I would be messing with that button so much because I'd be like, no, this is too far. Like, I'm going up, yeah. You know, and I've run several half marathons and I'd be like, no, I'm not running that far. Like, I'm going to make myself humongous and take like 10 steps and then I'll shrink down.
See, you know, you would know how to work it.
That's right. Well, and then that was kind of the nebulous sort of, like, did it ran on some kind of a power in that Ant-Man movie, but I didn't really understand, like, what was powering it. And
the Pym particles, bro.
I know, but it's like it was in a little vial, like it was going to run out, because when Cross had it, he was like, well, you know, you can get the suit, but you have to come to me to get the formula.
Yeah.
And so they didn't really go to that very much to where it was like, oh, you can use it X amount of times and then you're going to have to reload.
Yeah, that's true. And they should have, right? It should have been a finite number of growths and shrunks.
Yeah, it's just the same as the Spider-Man web stuff where you only need it when it's convenient for the plot or shit. I remember when the Spawn book came out. Where it was like he could only use his power so much, or that little clock kept ticking down, and then they just kind of forgot about it.
Oh, and Thor, she is only supposed to be away from Mjolnir for a certain amount of time, and then he turns, or she turns back into whoever they are when they're not Thor. Mm-hmm. But that's no longer a thing.
Inconsistencies, damn it.
God damn it. Come on, editors, do your job.
That's right. I mean, what else would they do besides, you know, get the work in? What else are they doing?
So you got your Ant-Man growth.
Yeah, so I liked that. I liked that Ant-Man growth. I liked how he was trying to kick some ass, even though he was huge, and they were kind of not really getting the better of him, but it was like clear that is like, dude, you're a little too big. Like, you're not nimble enough to really do too much.
Yeah.
Except kick some shit over, and that was all right.
Well, see, now for me, this speaks to the comic book, the title Ultimates from the Ultimate Universe. Mm-hmm. Because the movie itself, when they cast Sam Jackson as Nick Fury, that's when, to me, they showed me that the movie universe is based on the Ultimate Universe in comic books and not the 616 with Ant-Man with a red and blue costume or, you know, all the fancy stuff that we like, I like, in the regular comics, but it's more of this realistic take on what superheroes would look like in the real world. And that's what the Ultimates did. And that Nick Fury was a black guy that they drew to look like Sam Jackson before they cast Sam Jackson as Nick Fury. Mm-hmm. So that's a little background on that. So in the Ultimates, Hank Pym got real big to do some fighting, and he became so vulnerable because there was so much square footage to punch and to hit and to kick.
Yeah.
So it never seemed to me to be an advantage to be Giant Man. It seemed like you were just giving the enemies all this flesh to hit. And that's what it looked like they played out in the movie. In this movie, after he got big, he was getting hit, kicked, shot, webbed. All sorts of things happening to him because he had so much body to attack.
And it was like he's fighting underwater because he moves so slow.
Yeah.
It's like, well, how the hell could you ever get hit by something? I get that it's huge, like, you know, however wide his fist would be, but how could you ever get hit by that?
Yeah, so I guess his tactic was to be a diversion and to throw big ass shit at people. Cause he was throwing plane parts and he was throwing trucks and vans at people. He was causing a lot of damage.
Mm-hmm. So we go from that whole sequence, and then we had already mentioned when Bucky kind of gets reverted into the Winter Soldier and all of that. And we go to, I do like the fact that they were captured, and you got to see some people like paying the price a little bit for taking the stance that they took. And they weren't real pleased about being there, and you got to see the raft, and apparently those are the only three people that are held there. I was like, yeah, come on, you couldn't spend like the extra $20 to get a couple more CGI characters in their background. Because all you need is like a couple legs or something or a mention of somebody or whatever. But anyway, I figured that was something where you couldn't put like some villain that's behind bars, because what if you wanted to use it later? Then you have to get the same actor and it's a whole mess.
Yeah.
So we get that whole bit, and then we have a little bit of this whole, this Russian super soldier, and there was a team of five of them, and they were worse than Bucky. And I kind of thought that that was really underdeveloped. Like, I figured that they would leave that a little more open-ended in case they wanted to do like a Cap 4 and have that be the thing. Because I remember for a while it was the rumor that Sebastian Stan was going to take over the role of Captain America.
Oh, yeah. Because they thought, I mean, they let people believe that they were going to follow the comic books Civil War, and that that Steve Rogers was going to be assassinated.
Mm-hmm. And that they were going to – because at the time, you know, Bucky was Captain America, and then there was all these rumors about Chris Evans's movie deal, and he only had a certain amount of appearances, and he was starting to run out of those and blah, blah, blah. And so I was like, oh, shit, okay. So, well, Sebastian Stan, like, he's good. Like, I guess I could go along with that. And, you know,
psych!
Yeah, in this we have those super villains that looked like they were a little scary to Bucky, to the Winter Soldier, because they were kind of kicking his ass. Yeah. And I was like, ooh, these guys are tough. Like, I don't know if they're going to use this later on or not. And Baron Zemo took care of that real quick. And I was like, okay, like that, they kind of set that up for a pretty quick letdown.
Yeah, see, because that was attached to the through line of the Winter Soldier to begin with, and why, and it kind of set up for that final battle. Was in the beginning they showed them thawing out the Winter Soldier, which is Bucky, and sending him on a mission in 1991 to intercept some Oldsmobile and make it smash into a tree, which I hated watching every single time.
Oh yeah, I didn't like that either.
And go into and steal something out of the back. And that's all the footage that they ever showed every time they showed it, to remind us that Bucky did this thing back in 1991. So the thing that he stole out of the back were these super soldier formulas that made the other Winter Soldiers. And that's the thing, I think, in story convention, I think they directed our attention to the things he stole out of the back and these Winter Soldiers to kind of throw us off the trail. Mm-hmm. That the major part of that mission, and the reason why Zemo wanted to get the videotape of that mission, was because the people that drove that car was Howard and Maria Stark.
Mm-hmm.
And Bucky, in stealing that, brutally murdered Howard Stark and Maria Stark.
I mean, really hard to watch.
Yep.
Oof.
Because you know that he did that shatter the nose bone, drive it up into the brain thing. You know he did that.
Mm-hmm.
He had to have, because that's the only thing that he kept striking Howard in the nose. It's like, oh, hard, hard, hard. And we only see that after we get to this point where Zemo has Bucky and Cap got away from that big superhero fight. Everybody did all their part to let them get away, including poor Rhodey did that dive into the middle of the field from friendly fire. Mm-hmm. And everybody, all the people that you said got arrested, they took their blows, they diverted enough, then they got put on the raft, enough for Bucky and Cap to break away to get to this place, because according to their information, Zemo was on his way to that Winter Soldier base just to activate those Winter Soldiers. But like you're saying, when we get to the base, we find out that Zemo killed the Winter Soldiers. So it wasn't ever his plan to even use the Winter Soldiers. As a matter of fact, he said, do you think I want more of people like you running around?
Right.
He said, that's not what I wanted. And what he wanted was he wanted Cap and Iron Man to be in that place so they can see Winter Soldier kill Stark's parents so he could divide the Avengers.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was really slick. You know, I didn't expect it to sort of fool me like that.
Right. And then his motivation completely was that he's Sokovian, and he had been listening to the recording of his wife and kid. Come to find out, they died in the Sokovian thing. So his whole motivation was, I'm going to destroy all this, but I can't do it as an enemy. I got to let you guys get destroyed from within yourselves. So he manipulated all these things to cause the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And they were fighting, more fighting.
More fighting. A lot of good choreography again. I still think that Iron Man's a little too tough in the movie universe.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I think it's just because Robert Downey Jr., I'm just like, I just don't ever buy him as like someone that would be good at fighting.
Oh, good point.
When I see him, I'm just like, I don't know. I did really like the fact that the program sort of created a plan for what to do.
Yeah.
I thought that that was really cool. I was like, okay, I can get along with that. Like, he can kind of hang, you know, he can handle himself a little bit, but he's like, all right, analyze what to do and then execute.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. I liked that a lot, actually.
That's Friday. The AI. She got a little smart with him at one time. Did you?
Yeah, the new. Did you? Yeah.
She said, she's like, who do you think I am? And he said, I picture you, as a redhead. And she said, you must be thinking about somebody else.
And
I was like, oh shit. What? That's not nice.
You're not programmed to talk back.
Right? Especially about her.
Mm-hmm.
She's talking about Pepper Potts. That hurts.
Mm-hmm. So, no, I liked that. I loved the callback to the I can do this all day when he's getting his ass kicked.
Yeah.
I was really surprised when Bucky got his – oh, well, spoilers, but when Bucky gets his arm blown off.
Yeah, so was he. Did you see his face?
Well, I just meant that I thought that it was going to be a thing where he, like, rips out the center of Stark's – like his, basically his heart, you know, his power source. And then we'd have a deal where Cap, you know, snaps out of it or whatever and decides that's enough or something. It's kind of the way that I thought that was going to go. But I was like, holy shit, his arm got fucking blown off. Holy cow.
So that took care of that threat.
Well, yeah, because I was watching that like I was 10 years old. I mean, I was just, oh my God, they're kicking the shit out of each other. Look at this. Oh, that's cool. Look at that. You know, I was doing that the whole time. I was very much into it.
Yes, man. Yeah. That's what I love about these movies, is that you just regress and it's just wonder and it's spectacle and it's just, wow, it's breathless. You're holding your breath for 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Wondering, well, how's that going to turn out? And, oh my God. What? Whoa. Oh shit. Oh no. Just all these emotions just get ripped out of you. I just love that stuff.
Yeah. Well, and it doesn't hurt that we have, you know, decades of history with the characters too.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
That definitely adds something to it. Okay. Well, that's pretty much the end of my notes. What else, did you want to mention? What else have we missed in the Captain America film?
Well, this one thing stood out to me. So Cap won the battle between him and Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
He then is leaving, and Stark wants him to, is taunting him that that's not your shield. My father made that shield. Mm-hmm. So Cap throws the shield away, says, okay, take the shield then, and leaves, and he's gone. And he takes, of course, he's taking Bucky with him. So Stark goes back to Avengers headquarters and is mopping up good old Rhodey. He is paralyzed, and he's using these hydraulics. We get a Stan cameo that calls him Howard Stank.
Yep, Howard Stank.
And Rhodey, and I want to believe with all my heart this is all ad-libbed. He's like, yes, this is that Tony Stank. That's who he is. Thank you for that. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Table one for Tony Stank. So when he was doing all that, you could see Robert Downey Jr. laughing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm laughing. I'm using that from now on. It's just a beautiful moment. And the other thing is then we go to Steve, and Bucky has decided to put himself back into suspended animation because he can't trust his head.
Yeah, really surprised by that.
The thing that got me was – It was so incidental. I didn't recognize this until the end of that scene. When he's talking to Bucky, there's a doctor walks by. The doctor's black. When they change the camera angle, there's a woman at a console. The woman's black. Then when he's going into the suspended capsule, you see two more black people. And it didn't stand out to me because I see black people. I see them. When I see somebody black, it's like, yeah, that's a person. Okay, what's happening in the scene? But then when he walks through another door, he's talking to T'Challa. They're in Wakanda. Everybody's black except him and Steve. And I was thinking, oh, yeah, they cast that accurately. Those are Wakandans. They're in Wakanda. And then you look out the window and you see the big black
the huge-ass panther.
Totem. Mm-hmm. And Steve is like, you know, when they find out that you have him, they're going to come for him. And T'Challa's like, let them try. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah! Go get him, try!
What did you think of the Black Panther trailer? Have you seen? Oh, you don't watch the trailers?
No, I don't watch nobody's trailers.
I did see there was like a cast list, and it's in Wakanda, right? The movie's in Wakanda. And there was people on there bitching because it was like, oh, this cast has nothing but black people in it.
You
don't say. You think so?
Is that right?
God.
Why would they do that?
See, like 90% of all movies ever made for the opposite of that. Jeez Louise.
But does anybody ever say, gee, there's a lot of white people in this movie?
Yeah,
why are there so many white people in this movie?
Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah, so I will say that I saw the Black Panther trailer and I am really looking forward to it.
See, and the reason why I don't watch them is because I'm going to see this movie. Come hell, high water, come meteor strike, come impeachment, come nuclear strike, I'm going to see this movie. So I don't need to see the trailer. I know I'm going to see the movie.
Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where we're at with Captain America: Civil War. Am I right?
So good.
I thought it was really good as well. So that pretty much wraps us up for this episode. If you have any comments, suggestions, or movies that you'd like to hear us talk about, you could email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You could follow the show over at Twitter. Our handle is @plainlabelpod. You could follow me over there as well. I'm @EricWilliams79. We also have a Facebook page and an Instagram account. Just search for Plain Label Podcast and you'll find us over there. And if you wanted to help us out a little bit, you could head over to movienoise.com, Derek's movienoise.com, and there you're going to find our episodes posted. And if you click on the full description, you're going to find links to our Amazon wish list, our Amazon shopping link, where we get a little piece of whatever you spend over the Amazon, and our Audible link, where again, you can get something for free just by signing up. So I do want to thank Alan once again for coming on and helping me fill in my superhero gaps. If people wanted to hear more from you or get in touch with you, where could they do so?
Several places. You can go to Twitter. I am @NewMutant on Twitter. I'm on the Facebooks under Alan Anthony. Or you could go to www.powerprinciple.co. Thepowerprinciple.co. And that's my comic book is online for free, all 12 issues. You better get it.
And if you look really hard, you can find me in there too.
You will find him, but I want you people to read the comic and find him. Don't just go to the one page or two pages where he's at.
That is right. Although my wife does say, she's like, you know, you need to start working out if you're going to look like the way that Alan drew you in there.
Everybody's going to have to start working out if they're going to look the way I draw them.
Mm-hmm.
Including myself.
So there you go. So check out Alan's book over there. If you want to talk to him, check him out over on Facebook or Twitter. So thank you for listening. And Alan and I will be back next week with another discussion on the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the films Doctor Strange and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Get ready.
Hey, shady baby, I'm hot like the prodigal son. Pick up a little, meeny, miny, moe, and flower, you're the chosen one.